America Ferrera starred for 4 years in the TV sitcom Ugly Betty, for which she won an Emmy, a Golden Globe, and a SAG Award. Now you can see her live on stage at the Women's Project in Laura Marx's play called Bethany. In it, she plays a single mom who has been devastated by the downturn in the economy. She's lost her home, her daughter, and she's about to lose her job selling cars. She's desperate to get her daughter back, and she's squatting in an abandoned house with a smart but not so stable fellow vagrant while trying to close one more car sale before the dealership shuts down. Bethany is playing at City Center Stage 2 on West 55th Street until February 17th, and I'm very pleased it has brought America Ferrera to our show today. Hello.
Hi, thank you for having
me. Was that a good enough synopsis for you?
The way you put it, it sounds so dramatic.
And it isn't dramatic?
It is. It is, but it's also a very interesting tone, which is what drew me to the project. It's dramatic, and the events are many that happened to her in a short span of time on stage, But you never know where it's going. When I first read the script, I had no idea where it was going.
And that's confused people about what genre to put it in. I've seen it described as a dark comedy. But the seriousness of your character, Crystal's plight, and some of the darker events in the play make it impossible, despite the laughs, for me to call it a comedy.
Right. And, you know, the comedy comes out of an intense drama. I mean, and the knowingness in the audience that, you know, what we're touching on is real and relevant and actually happening.
Does that create challenges for the actors, knowing that you're both going to, you got to really make this seem like serious drama at the same time you're getting laughs?
It's very interesting. You know, show to show, it can change. We can do two shows in one day, and the first one is a laugh riot comedy. The audience taps into the dark humor and laughs from beginning to end. And then in the next one, it can be complete silence. And, you know, we just have to stick to telling our story and play to the naturalness with which Laura Marx wrote the script.
Well, I've noticed, because I've been in both kinds of audiences, that it often takes one person who just finds everything funny,
right,
and then the whole audience starts listening for the funny stuff.
Right, right.
Crystal makes some pretty questionable decisions in the course of the play, but for it to work, we've got to be on her side. Do you think that the audience's subliminal associations with Ugly Betty help? Because Betty was a hard worker and a strong character.
Maybe. I think maybe people's associations with me have something to do with that. I would say that this is, it's definitely on stage in most recent years, the most mature role I've gotten to play, a mother, you know, a woman struggling with very real problems. And I think people are used to seeing me as sort of a kid, you know, with a big smile on my face, and as I was on Ugly Betty. So I do think that there's a part of how people associate me that might transfer to Crystal in Bethany.
Well, I have to note that Crystal seems to be a much better dresser than Betty ever is.
Yes, she has the fashion gene that Betty lacked.
So how much theater have you done? Did you begin in theater?
I grew up doing theater since I was in third grade. My first production was the junior high's production of Romeo and Juliet. I snuck my way in there, and I played the apothecary in Romeo and Juliet, and I was bit by the stage bug, and I did it in school. I did it in community theater.
Where were you growing up?
I grew up in Woodland Hills, California, mm-hmm, right outside Los Angeles proper, and I just did theater wherever anyone would let me, really. Mm-hmm. But I'm not trained in theater, so you know, what I learned was just by trial and error.
Well, you're also in an area that is movie crazy, obviously. I suspect that more of the people you grew up with wanted to be in the movies than in other parts of the country, or at least fantasize growing up and going into the movies.
Absolutely. And it was definitely something I was aware of, but being in the San Fernando Valley felt like being in Oklahoma in relation to Hollywood. You know, Hollywood was over the hill and somewhere I didn't know how to get to for a very long time.
What made you select this particular play? Is it the politics, do you think?
You know, I think that definitely the issues of the play worked on me when I first read it, but I was really taken by, you know, this female character that got to be in the play from beginning to end, and yet there was so little placed on her. I thought, you know, any actress playing this role could turn this role into a number of different things. And I just really thought this is going to be a fun thing to explore and discover, and not be wedged into a certain box. There were no labels on this character, so that was exciting to me.
Well, both Ugly Betty and your movie Real Women Have Curves had feminist messages. Do you think of this as a feminist play?
I do not think of this as a feminist play at all, and I never really thought about Ugly Betty as a feminist piece either. And, you know, to my surprise, Real Women Have Curves resounded with men as much as it resounded with women when we traveled the world with that film. And, you know, I don't ever really go into a piece thinking, you know, this is for this audience. It's surprising, you know, who a very specific story can touch, even when it's not who you think is going to be moved by it. For example, with Bethany, we've had so many young people come see the show, 14-year-olds, 16-year-olds, who have such interesting things to say about the way they've viewed this sort of financial crisis through the eyes of their parents, you know, through their own eyes, watching their parents deal with the crisis. And they have wonderful things to say about the piece, and you don't think this is a piece for 14 and 16 year olds.
Well, you, after your parents' divorce, you were brought up by your mother alone.
My mother.
So did you connect to this?
Absolutely. Yes, that's a huge piece of it for me. My mother raised 6 kids on her own, which seems like an impossible task, and all 6 of us ended up in university and were alive, and we came out unscathed from childhood, relatively. So I related in a huge way to what it must take to survive when you feel on your own.
My guest is America Ferrera, who, with Ken Marks, Tobias Siegel, and more members of the cast, are appearing in Bethany at the New York City Center Stage 2. Why is it called Bethany? That's the name of her daughter. She never even appears in the play.
Yes, Bethany never appears in the play. You know, I've never had that conversation with the writer. I imagine that it's, you know, Bethany is what it's all about. It's what it's all for.
Well, it takes a while for the audience to even learn that she exists.
Yeah. Which I thought was really, when I read it, it kept me on the edge of my seat. I wanted to know who's Bethany and when is she going to come into the picture? And, you know, to learn that not only Crystal, but all the other characters in the play as well have their own version of Bethany, what their value system is and what they're willing to do to protect that value system. They each have that thing that represents their Bethany for them.
Well, if it weren't for Bethany, Crystal would have a lot more freedom, and many of the problems that she has to deal with in this play wouldn't really be problems. She'd have other ways, other routes out of it.
Right. Well, I think, you know, having her be a single mother and striving for her child makes it a lot more relatable to anyone who who is a parent or anyone who can imagine, you know, what they would do. It's interesting, coming out of the play, a lot of people will come up to me and just say, yep. I would have done the same thing. There's nothing I wouldn't do to have gotten my child back. Men, women, you know, they relate to her because Laura's put it in this perspective of, you know, a parent doing what she has to do for her child's survival.
You're talking about a dilemma that she has. She is offered the opportunity to sell a car, which she thinks is going to save her. And,
right.
And resolve all of her problems, and she winds up just getting into more trouble.
Yeah.
In fact, both of the men in this play have made me feel uncomfortable being a man at times.
You know, I think that for everyone, everyone in the play, not just Crystal, you know, there's a certain system that they've come to count on. And when that system falls apart and there's no longer, you know, the illusion of security, you realize that it was never there. It was just that, an illusion of security. And I think that Crystal blames herself, as do others, for ever buying into it. And I think that's what we are facing right now in our society, in our culture, is what can we trust? What can we believe? What can we buy into? and not expect it all to just crumble beneath us and be left without any system to help.
She squats in a house which she discovers is not empty. She has to share it with this guy named Gary, who is someone who's probably smart but damaged, would you say?
Gary is probably the more, stereotypical definition of what you think of when you think homelessness. You know, someone who has been living homeless for a long time, who's maybe there by choice, by their belief system.
Well, he has strong opinions on things.
He has very strong opinions, and he doesn't seem to want to get out. This is his life, and he's made this lifestyle. And then you stick Crystal in here, which is not the image that people hold in their minds when they think of homelessness. And it really challenges, how did these two people end up in the exact same situation?
And then if Gary's not bad enough, there's Charlie. He's a motivational speaker who's just pretending to buy a car to get into Crystal's pants. The speeches he practices making sound kind of brilliant. Is that part of our problem as a country, that we think we can change our lives by a kind of optimistic mind control?
I think that's absolutely what's being explored. I remember when I first read the script and I was reading those speeches, I was like, yeah, I believe in these things. You know, for me, you know, think of what I've accomplished and where I've come from. Without positive thinking and without a certain level of magical thinking, I can't imagine how I would have gotten to where I am in my life.
On the other hand, we probably wouldn't have gotten to the economic crisis if we hadn't engaged in magical thinking, people taking on mortgages that they, in many cases, knew they couldn't afford, and the lender knew they couldn't afford.
Right. So it's that very, very, that thing of where's the line? Where does optimism become really denial?
Now, you said that you did stage theater when you were a kid. And then this is the first time you're back on the stage in New York, but you were in Chicago
in London. I did an 8-week run of Chicago, and I had never done a musical before, even as a kid. So as a kid I did some musicals, but I never had to star in a musical, so that was a huge challenge for me. But in terms of being on in a straight play in New York, this is my first time on stage in 7 years in New York.
Uh-huh. And are you based in New York, because you were also in The Good Wife, which is shot in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
You played an undocumented nanny whose existence brought down one of the political figures in the show. Was that just a nice, meaty role?
It was a wonderful role. I do live in New York. I moved here at the end of my college years, and I've been kind of called New York home ever since. The Good Wife was such a fun, fantastic role to get to bring to life, because it was something that's very dear to me, playing what we call dreamers, a young woman brought to the United States as a child and not really even knowing that she wasn't documented before. It was revealed to her later in her life when she'd already been an outstanding student and had done everything right, quote unquote.
So does working in television, is that closer to working in theater than making movies?
It is all so different from each other. It's so hard to compare, you know.
But you're working on a lot tighter schedule. In some cases, you're doing whole scenes almost like a stage play, aren't you?
Yeah. I mean, TV is definitely the fastest paced. We're definitely getting through a lot more. And there's so much virtue in that. I learned so much in television. It's like a boot camp. You just do your work, and then you see it, and then you go back and you do it again. And it's a real conversation with your work, where obviously theater takes as much out of you. I mean, I'm sick now. I'm constantly tired, and you got to find a way to get up on that stage and do it anyway. But you're doing the same piece night after night versus, you know, moving forward and exploring different circumstances with the same character.
But you're saying that it also is fatiguing.
Oh,
and in this case, you're also close to the audience. If somebody coughs in that first row, it's practically the same thing as being next to them on the subway.
Yeah.
This is a small theater.
It is a small theater. It's a very intimate theater. But I ride the subway, too, so I won't blame my audience. I think I'll blame the subway.
So what's next? This is a limited run.
Yes, I'm actually right after this going into shooting an independent film here in New York City that I'll be acting in and also am producing. And I just wrapped the biopic called Chavez that actor Diego Luna directed, and that will be out this year.
So. Oh, great. Well, America Ferrera joins Emily Ackerman, Kristen Griffith, Ken Marks, Tobias Siegel, and Myra Lucretia Taylor in Bethany at the City Center Stage 2 through February 17th. For more information, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much.